Welcome to Ancient Future Faith with Dr. Chris Alford, pastor of Epiclesis, an ancient future faith community in Sacramento. Just what is ancient future Christian faith? Join Chris each week as he talks with special guests about a refreshing renewal in evangelical worship and spirituality that's helping many believers get in touch with their ancient Christian heritage. Now, with another look at how the road to the evangelical future runs through the ancient past, here's Dr. Chris Alford.
Well, hi, folks, and welcome back to another edition of Ancient Future Faith. My name is Chris Alford, and I'm the host of the program brought to you each week here on KFIA Radio. And I'm also the blessed guy who is the pastor of Epiclesis, an ancient future faith church in Sacramento, California. As always, I'm hoping that you'll zip over to our website. It's epiclesis.org, spelled E-P-I-C-L-E-S-I-S.org. You can learn more about this thing called Ancient Future Faith or about the church. Best of all, we'd love to have you come worship with us in Sacramento on a Sunday morning at 10:30. Each week on the program, heard here on KFIA Radio, we love to bring you a collection of guests to talk about ancient future faith and their life and ministry. And on the phone today, calling in all the way from sunny, at least I assume it is, Florida, is Dr. James Hart. Hi, Jim, and welcome to the program.
Hello, Dr. Alford. Good to hear your voice. And it is not sunny right now in Florida. We're under a tornado warning, I think.
Well, there's a huge storm that's supposed to be coming in our way today as well, so maybe we have similar kind of weather. Jim, you and I first met some years ago when we were blessed to be in the inaugural class of the Robert E. Weber Institute for Worship Studies. Fast forward, can you believe it, 20 years, and now you are right. The president of that organization. Take just a minute, would you, and tell folks, well, anything we need to know about you just to get to know you a little bit better, and then I have all kinds of things I can't wait to talk with you about.
Sure. My background was in music. I have my bachelor's degree in sacred music from Oral Roberts University. I also went to Indiana for a few years in there. I did a master's of music and trumpet performance. Then I became first I was an orchestra director in a church, and then eventually a music minister. I started out in a Methodist church in Dallas, and then I moved to an Episcopal church in Jacksonville, and eventually an Episcopal church in Orange Park. And I'm still actually working some of that church. That church went through a change. It's now an Anglican church, and I still do one service a week at that church. But that congregation was the host congregation for the launching of the Institute for Worship Studies. Bob Weber had called me back in the late 1990s, looking for a place to host some classes for a new degree program he wanted to start. He, at that time, had a Doctor of Ministries program at Northern Seminary in Chicago, and they were allowing people into the program who had degrees other than a Master of Divinity, which is against the rules, against the accreditation rules of the Association of Theological Schools. So a new dean came in and said, we can't accept any more people who don't have Masters of Divinity into the program. So Bob called me and said, I want to open a school that will be available, give doctoral-level studies available to musicians, people who have MAs or MMs or Master of Church Music or something like that, that don't have MDivs but want to gain a theological perspective on what they do in worship and an ancient future perspective on what they do in worship. So he asked me if I'd be willing to host that at our church in Orange Park, this Episcopal church. So I actually went through the process of getting approval from the vestry, the board of the church. We welcomed the institute. I said to Bob, I would like to be in the first class. And he said, you're accepted. That's how easy it was back to get accepted to IWS. Now it's a process you have to go through. But it was pretty easy back in those days. So we opened our doors in 1999. You and I were standing shoulder to shoulder in that first class. I think we both played trumpet, actually, in that first opening convocation.
Yeah, we sure did.
Not mistaken. And then I graduated in 2002 with you and asked by Bob to become the dean of administration, still full-time with the church as the music worship leader, music director, music minister. And then when Bob became ill in 2006, he asked me if I would take over the school. And I said no, and I mentioned many other people I thought were more qualified, including probably you. and Bob said, well, you know the school well because you've been there since the beginning. You've been on site since the beginning, so I need someone who knows the school really well. He said, you'll learn the higher education ropes as you go through it. So I reluctantly said yes, and I've been doing that since 2007. So Bob died in April 2007, and I became president on his death.
Well, and doing it so ably, Jim. And, you know, I tell you this at least occasionally behind the scenes, but I want to do so publicly and say what a marvelous job you're doing. And those of us who knew and loved Bob know beyond a shadow of a doubt that he'd be thrilled with what you're doing and how you're going about doing it. We probably ought to say something about Bob Weber. We're talking about the late theologian Robert E. Weber. He was for a long time at Wheaton College, and then, as Jim mentioned, also at Northern Seminary. Also did some teaching and offered a degree program through Tyndale, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
But Bob was a prolific author. In fact, it was odd if he was not writing a book. He wrote more than 45 or something like that. I've lost count. And certainly one of the clarion voices in a call to reform worship and spirituality in the church. He is the guy who coined the phrase, at least I think so, ancient future faith, and also that little calling card that I use each time we gather on this radio program where I say the road to the future runs through the past. That also comes from Robert Weber. On the phone with me is Jim Hart. He's the president of the Robert E. Weber Institute for Worship Studies. Jim, what else about Bob? I know that you probably have an item or two to throw in and just say a brief word about our mentor and friend, Robert Weber.
Yeah, you know, as a theologian, he was a historical theologian. He studied the patristics, the first five centuries of the church. And as he studied that, he noticed how far we had moved as Christians, as Protestant Christians, particularly in North America, how far we had moved away from some of the sensibilities of the early church. And I think he wanted to call the church back to its rootedness, back to the way the faith was viewed and lived out in the first two centuries of the church, and what that meant for us in terms of spiritual formation, belief patterns, how we approach worship, how we approach life, how we approach family, how we approach work, everything we do. And I remember him telling a story that he was pondering what area of patristic theology he wanted to get into, and he said he's out mowing his grass one day, and he pushed the lawnmower under a bush, and I don't know what this bush had to do with this story, besides the fact that maybe Moses had the same type of experience.
I was going to ask, was it on fire?
All of a sudden, God spoke to him and said, worship. And so he decided he was going to emphasize worship. He was not a musician. I don't think he sang particularly well.
No.
He may have played the radio, but that's about as far as it went actually playing anything. So he wasn't a musical person, but he deeply loved worship and loved the sense of orthodoxy, which means... Ortho means right, and doxy, it comes from the word doxa in Greek, which means glory, or we translate that as worship. So right worship, orthodoxy is right worship. So he saw that, and along with the church fathers, that worship was the true repository of the doctrines and dogmas of the faith. And if you wanted to know how people believed, look how they worshiped. If you want to form your faith correctly, then form your worship correctly, because that will form your heart and your mind towards the Lord.
Folks, you're listening to a conversation with my friend Jim Hart. He's the president of the Robert E. Weber Institute for Worship Studies since 2007, but has been involved in worship leadership and music ministry in various contexts all over the world for over 40 years, which is amazing because he's only about 42, so he really got started at an early age, and has taught in the areas of worship and theology and music at various colleges and seminaries and conferences. Jim, something you said there at the end reminded me of one of the items I wanted to talk with you about, and that is in the early years, and by the way, it was not easy to get into. It was incredibly arduous, and all of the months of testing and everything.
What is now?
But in the early days of the Institute, it really was a school for worship leaders, music leaders in the church. It certainly has changed over time, and I know this because I still have my finger in the pie a little bit with what's going on at the Institute with some help that I do in the thesis area. But I think it's worth pointing out, isn't it, that this interest in worship renewal and spirituality renewal in an ancient future way goes beyond, quote, just the music people, right?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, it was surprising to us that Bob's initial vision was that it would draw in people who are worship leaders, musicians, artists, that kind of thing. But what happened was we had more and more senior pastors, we had missionaries, we had theologians, we had school administrators who were coming to take degrees at IWS. And we would sometimes intentionally send them to Northern Seminary because Northern had a DMIN program. So if people had MDivs, we'd say, well, go to Northern. You have the same teachers, you have a lot of the same curriculum. And they said, no, we want to come to Florida. Now, I don't know if that's because we don't have as much snow in Chicago or we have beaches or what it is, but something continued to draw folks here. And the program in Northern eventually effervesced.
Right, it's so no more.
When Bob died, it didn't continue. So we draw just a wide variety of people with incredible talents, publishers even. As I mentioned, senior pastors, we have affinity groups on campus for people who are in different areas of career. So we have one affinity group for people in Hong Kong who are in the publishing business.
Wow.
We have an affinity group for senior pastors because what they discover here, what they learn here, they want to be able to apply within their own career area of being a senior pastor and how that affects what they do. So they would bring in a greater sensibility in terms of homiletics and some of the scriptural interpretive lenses and things of that sort.
Well, and we should also mention, you touched on it, but there is now a large contingency of students who come not from North America, right? I mean, they're all over the world.
Yeah, we've grown to about 34% of our student body is international, or I should say holds a non-American passport.
Right.
That includes Canadians, but the majority of those are outside continental North America.
Jim, I want you to talk here in just a minute about your sort of regular day-to-day, week-to-week activities at the Institute. We certainly want to encourage people to go to the Institute's website and also to very thoughtfully consider giving to the ongoing mission at the Institute. While you're thinking about that, let me just remind folks that they're listening to Ancient Future Faith. My name is Dr. Chris Alford. I'm the pastor of Epiclesis, an Ancient Future Faith church in Sacramento, California. You can learn more about the church and about Ancient Future Faith by zipping over to our website. It's epiclesis.org, epiclesis.org. I'm also the founder of an organization called the Ancient Future Faith Network, and that website is ancientfuturefaithnetwork.org, where you can learn more about Robert Weber and the early church and some of the work that we're trying to do in coordinating the efforts of folks who are interested in this revival and refreshing and renewing that's going on really across the world when it comes to ancient future faith. Jim, I mentioned to you just before the break there that I'd like folks to hear just a little bit about your duties at IWS. What do you do day to day, and what's it like to be the president of the Institute for Worship Studies? And tell us a little something about the Institute.
Well, let me say this first, that I myself am a member also of the Ancient Future Faith Network, and many of our students and faculty members and board members here are members as well. We see the Ancient Future Faith Network is a sister organization to us, and we so appreciate the work you're doing in supporting churches that are trying to bring a sense of a historical rootedness to what they do in worship and in the life of the church.
Bless you.
Thank you for your work with us.
Well, thank you so much.
All presidents do a lot of the same things. So what we tend to do is, of course, we have to do some administrative work with the school, and there's a lot of that that goes on. We raise students and raise money because essentially the president is in charge of making sure that we secure our the two major revenue streams for the school, which is how we make sure our mission is accomplished in the world. So we raise money to support what we're doing and raise students. If we don't have students in the seats, then we have no reason to exist. So we have to have both students and funds to help support that. A student's tuition here only covers about 75% of the cost to come to school. So the other 25% we have to raise through charitable donations. But also, presidents are required or should have responsibilities in terms of scholarship and how they continue to learn and continue to grow in the area of what the school's mission is all about. So our mission as a school is that we embrace the historical church. We emphasize five areas of reflection biblical, theological, historical, cultural, and missiological. So I do a lot of reading and interacting with people on a lot of those topics of and I skew a bit towards theology because musicians tend to be lacking in the area of theology. So that's an area that I emphasize a little bit more so I can be up to speed in terms of how we go about interacting with theology and with historical sensibilities within the church. So lately I've been spending a lot of time reading about patristic theology. I recently did a presidential address on the objective role of objective beauty in worship. Mm. And what is objective beauty? It comes from interacting with a theologian named Hans Urs von Balthasar, who was a favorite theologian of Robert Weber, one of the what are called the Nouvelle Theologie of the mid-20th century in France. And Balthasar's 15-volume work on theology, first 7 volumes are on aesthetics. Mm. So I've been doing some work with aesthetics and what that means, what objective beauty means. And Balthasar's perspective is that because beauty has been more or less dismissed from theological discourse over the past 500 years, that in the great three, what they call the three transcendentals of beingness, or you'll recognize these terms, but the true, the good, and the beautiful are considered to be the transcendentals of beingness. Mm. When beauty has been dismissed, but by the way, all three work together. Truth works with goodness, which works with beauty, which works with the other two. So when one gets dismissed, the other two become somewhat undermined. So Balthasar's perspective is that since beauty was dismissed from theological discourse over the last 500 years, and not completely dismissed, but dismissed greatly compared with truth and goodness, he said that the result is that the good is no longer attractive, and the true no longer matters.
Wow! Yeah, wow.
So his call was to recover the sense of objective beauty, so that the good would once more be attractive, and the true once more matter. Mm. We see that in the culture all around us.
Sure,
we see an undermining all around us of the true and the good. And the beautiful. Actually, I started off my presidential address by saying I don't know that I've ever seen our culture in North America as ugly as it is right now.
Yeah,
with the polarizing postures that people take, the self-aggrandizement that's so prevalent. And yet, a recovery of beauty will help to begin to mediate that. So I'm pressing for that as something we need to look at.
Let me pick your brains about that just a minute, Jim. At the Institute, how would you say that you folks are going about reintroducing the notion of beauty to the students who are coming to get this doctoral degree in worship studies?
Well, I think we're advocating for beauty in terms of the students' reflection on how worship is organized, how it's planned. We use the word liturgics, being the study of the structure of worship.
Mm-hmm.
So we are advocating for beauty in liturgics. We advocate for beauty in worship arts. We're advocating for beauty in homiletics. We're advocating for beauty in scriptural presentations. We're advocating for beauty in scriptural interpretation. But maybe more to it, advocating for beauty in terms of the virtue of one's life and what that looks like before the world.
Wow!
So all those things work together to begin to bring beauty back into the conversation on theology.
Jim, let's say that someone has heard this radio program and their heart is just soaring because they have longed to hear someone articulate these things and describe, for goodness sakes, a place where folks can come and learn about the theology and the history and the foundations of Christian worship and then how to go about practicing it in this way. And they'd say, boy, I'd like to support a mission like that. Tell us a little bit about how we can learn more about the Institute and where can we go to support the mission of the Institute?
Well, the best place to start would be at our website at iws.edu, www.iws.edu. That's the best place to start, but also looking at our different social media posts. We're on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. I have a blog I've been keeping up with
I noticed
almost
that.
Weekly.
Yeah, I noticed that.
That also gives some overview information that then you can go to the website and find out more information. So that's the best place to go. But I would also invite people to come to visit, particularly when we have our worship seminars. We have seminars twice a year in conjunction with our on-campus sessions. One is in January and one is in June. January is particularly attractive in Florida if you live up north, or in California. I'm not sure, because in California your weather is like the same all year round, right?
Mostly, yeah.
So you may not have that drive as much to get away to Florida. But by the way, Sacramento is a beautiful place. When I visited you out there, I really enjoyed.
We want you to come back, by the
Sacramento.
Way. Thank you.
But I would say come to Florida for one of our sessions. We have one coming up this June with theologian Hans Boersma, who is the J.I. Packer Chair of Theology at Regent College in Vancouver. And he's going to be doing a two-day seminar on heavenly participation. That's open to anybody who wants to come and be part of that. And then if they come, they can see what life is like in the IWS community with our chapel services and our evening practica, our meals that we eat together. As you know, we form a semi-monastic community while we're on campus, so we don't wear monk robes or anything or grow long beards, but, but we do spend a lot of time together in prayer and in meals and in learning together. It's a wonderful community.
Well, I was going to say another nifty thing about going in June is that folks can also see a graduation ceremony, and the worship is absolutely powerful, and I'm sure that President Hart would love to let you sit in on a class or certainly go to the worship seminar. There's all kinds of nifty things to do and see. And folks, I want to appeal to you for a couple of things. Please thoughtfully consider giving to the mission of IWS. Again, you can pop over to the iws.edu website and think about making a tax-exempt gift to the IWS, perhaps to the scholarship fund or the general fund to help some students. And then also this, you may in your travels bump into folks who would benefit from an education at IWS. Maybe there's a pastor or a worship leader or somebody, a layperson in your life who wants to get further education about worship and spirituality, especially through an ancient future lens. The IWS also has a master's program as well as the doctoral program. And I know, because I know Jim, he would love to give you more information about that. One thing I mentioned about graduation and seeing graduation is that yet another group of graduates are going to be counted among those who have been through the Institute. How many now, Jim, are we up to?
Well, it's somewhere around 530 or something. I'm not sure the exact number, but somewhere in that neighborhood. So that's since you and I graduated in 2002. So we're approaching, I think, our 17th, I think, graduation, I believe.
Wow.
This year, or 16th, maybe 16th this year.
Jim, one of the many things I appreciate about you is that you wear so many hats so very well, and I'm very grateful for you taking the time to join us today. Thanks a bunch. I really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. God bless you guys in your ministry with Epiclesis and with AFFN.
Thank you so much. Jim Hart has been my guest today. He's the president of the Robert E. Weber Institute for Worship Studies. And best of all, and I'm most proud of this, he's my friend. Folks, until we gather again for another edition of Ancient Future Faith, I really want you to be thinking about this. Surely, the road to our evangelical future does run through our ancient Christian past. Until next time, the Lord be with you.
Thank you for joining us for another look at Ancient Future Faith. There is a refreshing wind of renewal blowing through the evangelical church as more and more worshipers turn for inspiration to the rich language and pattern of the ancient church, and they're rediscovering classic Christianity and learning to draw strength from a deep well of time-tested truth and tradition. Want to experience Ancient Future Faith for yourself? Join us for worship at Epiclesis in Sacramento on Sunday mornings at 10:30 a.m. in the chapel at 4600 Winding Way. You can contact us by calling 916-572-9113 or online at epiclesis.org. That's 916-572-9113 or on the web at epiclesis.org.
Hi there, folks. Pastor Chris here with a little note to say that we're right in the middle of one of the best times of the whole Christian year, the celebration of Easter.
In the ancient church, Easter was a season of rejoicing, not just a day, and the Easter season is a great opportunity to see what ancient future Christian worship at Epiclesis looks like. Find more information on the web at epiclesis.org. That's EPICLESIS.org. The Lord be with you, and see you next Monday afternoon at 4 p.m. for another edition of Ancient Future Faith.